Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for the living legend Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Michael is off today, but he will definitely be back and ready to go. Michael, I want to thank you so much, my friend, for this wonderful, wonderful opportunity once again to fill in for you. You truly are the living legend. And every time for me to be on this show is just an immense treat. Thank you so much, Michael. We have an absolutely superb show for you today, members of the Savage Nation. Go to michaelsavage.com. There are some absolute must-read, superb stories. There is a top story right at the top of michaelsavage.com, a dramatic defeat for President Obama as the Democrats drop the public option. A bombshell of a story, which in fact was first broken by my paper today, The Washington Times. Five Americans from the Northern Virginia area, just outside of Washington, D.C., have been arrested in Pakistan, plotting to commit terrorist acts and wage jihad. Homegrown radicalism is becoming even more dangerous and more of a threat. But the issue of the hour. President Obama goes to Oslo, Norway, to deliver his acceptance speech for the Nobel Peace Prize. There is no other way to say it, members of the Savage Nation. What we saw today in Oslo, Norway, was a ghastly spectacle. There was the shame of the United States on full display in the eyes of the world. For there was our president, our commander-in-chief, Barack Hussein Obama, accepting an award from that leftist committee, the Nobel Peace Prize, for having accomplished nothing. Remember, when this thing was first announced, Obama was in power only 2 weeks, and by February 1st, all of the nominations for the Nobel Peace Prize had to be submitted, which means they only gave him the award for those 2 weeks in office. What did he accomplish in those 2 weeks? Nothing. And even more than that, he has now been in power for over 11 months. As we stand back, what has President Obama accomplished on the world stage to achieve peace? Why should he have gotten this most prestigious of honors? Everywhere we look, America is in retreat. Everywhere we look, America has lost its will, its credibility, and its purpose. We are now openly mocked and laughed at across the world. In Iraq, just yesterday, there was a massive terrorist bombing in which over 100 Iraqis were slaughtered. Terrorist insurgencies are up. Al-Qaeda is now reestablishing a stronghold in Iraq. We are now on the verge of snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. In Afghanistan, Obama has now pledged to send an additional 30,000 troops into a giant death trap. With rules of engagement so limiting, so severe, no army in the history of humanity could win this war. And we are losing in Afghanistan. Every day our soldiers are being killed. More towns and villages are falling to the Taliban as their offensive grows and grows. They are now resurgent. And yet perhaps the biggest story, one that the liberal mainstream media is deliberately downplaying because it reveals Obama to be the empty suit that he is. There was a famous saying under the Romans, that the emperor has no clothes. With Obama, the clothes has no emperor. For now, as I speak to you, the future of the Western world and the future of the security of the Middle East is at stake. For brave student demonstrators are now marching again in the streets of Tehran and all across Iran. And their battle cry is a simple one. We want an Iranian republic, not an Islamic republic. And these students, along with trade unions, along with democratic dissidents, all of these people opposed to that apocalyptic mullah regime are now looking for support from the United States of America, the leader of the free world. And yet Obama remains silent. He refuses to even say one word on behalf of those brave students who are being arrested and massacred as I speak to you. The streets of Tehran are full of Iranian blood. And yet our president doesn't even lift a finger. Can you imagine if in 1937 or 1938, the students of Germany rose up in a mass rebellion to overthrow Hitler's psychotic regime, and the Western world, and especially Franklin Roosevelt, did nothing and said nothing? Fast forward that to today. Ahmadinejad is the Hitler of our time. He has openly said to people in public, in speeches and in media interviews, that he is in contact with Allah himself, he believes, to bring about the second coming, what the Shiites believe is another Messiah, to bring about what they believe is the end of times. And this man, Ahmadinejad, has said, I will have a nuclear bomb and I will obliterate the Jews. And once I obliterate the Jews, I will then turn on great Satan, America himself. And the world will be engulfed in a ball of fire. So this hidden imam, this Muslim Shiite Jesus can come down and bring about the end of time. This regime is now tottering on the brink. Those students are now standing up and braving gunfire and beatings and torture. And our president says nothing. In China, the people of Tibet are facing ethnic cleansing. He says nothing. In Russia, journalists are being murdered. He says nothing. In Venezuela, those pro-democracy demonstrators continue to be murdered and tortured and imprisoned. And he says nothing. And yet, he is greeted in Norway like a conquering hero. The European left adores him. The European left says he is one of the greatest statesmen of our time. And yet he has accomplished nothing. And what is most to me, most damning, most shocking, most disgraceful, is look at some of the people who did receive the Nobel Peace Prize, people who genuinely deserved it. Look at Martin Luther King Jr., who braved fire hoses, who braved prison, who braved death threats, and eventually he lost his life in the service of fighting segregation and racism in the Deep South. Look at Nelson Mandela, who spent over a quarter of a century in prison to overturn the evils of apartheid. Look at General George C. Marshall, one of our greatest generals, the man who spearheaded the rebuilding of Western Europe and saved the European continent from being completely overtaken by communism. These men paid a tremendous price for their ideals of peace and justice, and they were rewarded with it with the Nobel Peace Prize after a lifetime of service in behalf of peace. What has this guy done, this charlatan, this fraud? Nothing. They have given him the award simply for being Barack Hussein Obama. Even Obama himself had to acknowledge in today's speech that he truly didn't deserve it compared to others who risked and gave their lives in the service of peace. We have the clip. Boys, let's roll it.
And then there are the men and women around the world who've been jailed and beaten in the pursuit of justice. Those who toil in humanitarian organizations to relieve suffering. The unrecognized millions whose quiet acts of courage and compassion inspire even the most hardened cynics. I cannot argue with those who find these men and women, some known, some obscure to all but those they help, to be far more deserving of this honor than I.
For once, President Obama, you and I agree. You are not deserving of this award, sir. And if you had any shred of dignity or integrity, you would not just give back the $1.4 million Peace Prize, which you now have given up the money for it, and saying you're going to give it to your charities. That I commend you. But what you would do is even something more. You would give back the award. You would say, I'm sorry, but with all due respect to all of those that were honored before me, to those that are risking their lives today in China, in Iran, in Iraq, in Russia, people who are dying in Darfur, in Sudan, those are the people that deserve this Nobel Peace Prize. I have done nothing, and so I reject this award. And instead, he didn't. He then goes and uses it as a platform to advance more of his agenda, to slander George Bush, to say that America has tortured, to say that Guantanamo must be closed. Again, he uses the world stage to attack his predecessor. Again, he shows himself in the eyes of the world to be nothing more than a cheap partisan hack who has no foreign policy and who has no concept of advancing the American national interest. And so the question I have to all of you, listeners of the Savage Nation, is do you believe that Barack Hussein Obama deserved the Nobel Peace Prize? Should he have given it back? I want to hear from you. 1-800-449-8255. Again, the number is 1-800-449-8255. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for the talk radio heavyweight champion of the world, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation. Savage. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. My friends, thinking about Obama's speech today, what struck me the most is here you have a president of the United States who has now dramatically escalated the war in Afghanistan. He has now pledged to send in 30,000 additional troops. He has now asked Europe and our NATO allies to kick in another 5,000 to 7,000 troops into his Vietnam, into a situation where we don't have the clear rules of engagement, where now we are fighting a scattered enemy that is blending in with the civilian population, where our military is being hamstrung at every turn, where now you have politicians in Washington deciding what our troops can do and can't do, what's a war crime, what's not a war crime, whether we are even in a war against radical Islam or not. And as he is now becoming the war president, as he has now committed to a dramatic escalation in Afghanistan, he's being given an award for peace. He's being praised as a peace statesman. Where's the peace? Everywhere you look, you have the Fort Hood massacre. You have the situation deteriorating in Pakistan. You have our troops being killed in Afghanistan. More are going into Afghanistan. The streets of Iran are flooded with blood. They are covered with blood. Everywhere you look, this man has brought about ruin and defeat. And yet this man who is now escalating this thing in Afghanistan, this war in Afghanistan, into another Vietnam, is now being hailed as the great peace statesman. Here's another clip. Boys, roll it.
I do not bring with me today a definitive solution to the problems of war. What I do know is that meeting these challenges will require the same vision, hard work, and persistence of those men and women who acted so boldly decades ago. And it will require us to think in new ways about the notions of just war and the imperatives of a just peace.
There you have it. Our comrade in chief, we have to think about new ways of what's a just war and the imperatives of a just peace. What, first of all, what is this guy even saying? Am I the only one? Half of what this guy says is utterly meaningless. It's gibberish. It's completely incoherent. He thinks he's being very profound, but he's just being obscure. That's one of the problems I have with him. The other one, to be frank, is he talks about our victories decades ago. He talks about us winning the Cold War. He talks about us winning World War II. You think we would have won World War II with the rules of engagement we have in Iraq and in Afghanistan? Do you think if we captured a terrorist mastermind, the man who murdered four American contractors in Fallujah and then burned and mutilated their bodies and then hung two of them over a bridge over the Euphrates River? And if that terrorist mastermind was caught, let's say some Nazi fanatic, some German fanatic was caught by our Navy SEALs, you think if he got a punch in the gut or a bloody lip that our Navy SEALs during World War II would have been court-martialed? Do you think we had the rules of engagement when we were fighting the Japanese and the Germans as we do in Afghanistan, where, God forbid, there's collateral damage, where if you end up killing a civilian by accident, you are then tried as a war criminal? This man has no idea how to win a war. He has never served a day in the military. This is a man who is trying to pose as a liberal statesman and now has committed us to a dramatic escalation in Afghanistan, and he has no idea what he's doing. He is playing politics with the lives of our soldiers. And it is now American men and women, it is our boys and girls who are going to have to shed their blood because of his insane social experimenting policies in Afghanistan. For him, this is all one big social engineering project in nation building. Well, Mr. Obama, I have news for you. We didn't practice nation building when we were hammering the Nazis. We didn't practice nation building when we hammered the Japanese. We built them up after we crushed them. We had a strategy for victory. Where is yours, sir? Because I don't see it. What I do see is you going to Oslo, Norway. And now, are you going to bow to the King of Norway? Because apparently you're meeting him for dinner. I don't know. You've been bowing to everybody. But you, sir, are a bankrupt president of a bankrupt government. And now everybody in the world can see it. And pretty soon, you and your boys are going to be chased out of Washington. This is Jeff Kooner, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is Jeff Kooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. The number to call, 1-800-449-8255. Do you think Obama deserved the Nobel Peace Prize? What did you think of his speech today? Should he have rejected the prize? I want to hear from you, ladies and gentlemen of the Savage Nation. Let's go to Joseph in New York. Joseph, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you very much, Jeff, and thank you for taking my call. It's an honor. It's an honor to speak to you. I listen to your program when you're filling in for Dr. Savage. I listen to Dr. Savage on a regular basis. Jeff, your commentary this evening is the preface to your program is one of the most intelligent, concise, and responsible journalism that I've heard in years. And I'm a student of history. I listen to you and Dr. Savage. I congratulate you on the things
thank you,
said this evening. Hello, Jeff.
Yeah, go ahead. You're on the air, Joseph. Go ahead. Shoot, man.
Thank you. Jeff, I do business in Russia and in Eastern Europe. The Russian guys, businessmen with whom I speak, came here as children. Their parents immigrated from the Soviet Union and from other parts of Eastern Europe. To each one of them, either the young men and women, responsible business people, tell me, these are the kind of things for which they left the Soviet Union. The things that they're seeing here now are the things that they ran away from in the Soviet Union. And they see it being repeated here, and they say Americans are blind to what's going on. The things that are happening here are carbon copies of why they left and ran away from the tactics, the Marxist tactics in the Soviet Union. And no one's recognizing it here. It's
Joseph, happening. Thank you for that call. You could not be more right, my friend. You couldn't. And let me be very frank with you. My grandparents and my parents fled Eastern Europe. They fled the persecution of communism. My grandfather lost nearly his entire family under communist rule. They murdered his brothers. They murdered his sisters. My grandfather's brother was a priest. They hung him from the rafters of his church, and they killed him with piano wire through the back of his brain. They asked him to repent. They told him, denounce your God, denounce your Catholic faith. If you do, we will give you a quick death. And he refused to do that. I know what America is. I know what the promise of the new world is. And this is why people don't understand. Why is it that I am so determined to oppose the Obama regime? Why am I so determined to oppose the Obama agenda? I get this all the time. They go, Jeff, look, what's it to you? You live in Washington. You're happily married. You have a nice home. Because I've seen this before. I've seen it with my parents and my grandparents. And I will be damned if I will allow it to happen here in the greatest country in the history of the world. This is a regime that is now trying to nationalize our health care. They are now trying to pass cap and trade, not even through the Senate, because the Senate won't even pass it. Even the moderate Democrats don't want to have anything to do with Obama's radical environmental agenda. No, they have to do it through the EPA. They have to now do it through the regulatory regime. They now have to do it. They have to circumvent democracy. They now even are going around Congress. That's how undemocratic this regime is. They are trying to repeal gays in the military. They are now spending like drunken soldiers. Just today, they've now going to lift the debt ceiling another $2 trillion, $1.8 trillion. They are going to bury us under a mountain of debt. And all the while, look at Obama's foreign policy. He stands with the people, not of Iran, but with the rulers and the mullahs. In fact, what they are now chanting in the streets of Tehran, this is what the Washington Post and the New York Times and CNN will never tell you. They have pictures everywhere and slogans and placards. Mr. Obama, either you are with us or you are against us. And by his silence, he is now saying he is with the Iranian mullahs. He always has a good word to say about Chavez. He won't speak up against Castro. He bows to the emperor of Japan. He semi-bows to the president of China. This is a man who is ashamed of his own country. He is an anti-American leftist. And we conservatives said it during the election campaign, and now we have been proven to be prophets. But my friends, members of the Savage Nation, socialism didn't work in Russia. It didn't work in Eastern Europe, and it will not work here. Believe me. Let's go to Harry in Florida. Harry, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Jeff. Absolutely brilliant monologue. Very concise, very to the point. One of the best I've heard in a long time. I congratulate
Thank you, Harry.
You on that.
Thank you, sir.
Now, I disagree, or I have a different view on Obama's rhetoric. I think it's all completely meaningless, Jeff. When I hear pundits and commentators try and pick apart his words and analyze it as if it had any meaning, as if he meant any word of it, as if it had any validity as a symbol to a concrete object. It doesn't. He just puts words out just to suit his ends. It doesn't matter to Obama, who is a complete sociopath. He has no conscience. He has no limits. The end justifies the means. And there are only three possibilities for the type of rhetoric that's meaningless and manipulative. He's either a complete sociopath, and or, as a Marxist, that is part of a playbook from going back to the time of Lenin. And also, as an Islamist or a Muslim, they are sanctioned to lie to infidels.
Harry, I want to thank you for that call. That is a very, very rich call. Harry, here's my answer to you. I don't even think you and I really disagree. He's both. He is a Marxist and he is a sociopath. This is a man who I think has no real moral core. He has no conscience. How can you stand there as he did last Tuesday at West Point? Just stand back for a second. Look at those beautiful young men and women. Look at their wholesome faces. Look at the purity and the innocence in their eyes. Look at the patriotism that you can just feel oozing from them. These people are willing to sacrifice their lives for this country. They are willing to risk everything to defend our freedoms. And you stand there in front of them. They're kids. They're 18, 19, 20 years old. They have their whole lives in front of them. They are the cream of our youth. They are the cream of this nation. And you stand there in good conscience like this man. How can you do that? and talk in this robotic mannerism of his, where he sends them to their deaths in Afghanistan, 30,000 new troops. For what? He didn't spell out a strategy for victory. He doesn't even want to define victory. He can't even define terrorism. It's a man-caused disaster. Even that's offensive, he says, to the Islamic world, to call it terrorism. When they blow people up, that's not terrorism. It's a man-caused disaster. And to send them with these kinds of rules of engagement, where they almost have to read the terrorists their Miranda rights if they capture them in Afghanistan, where, God forbid, you punch somebody in the mouth, you kick him in the gut, you do anything that could be perceived as wrong, you will need a lawyer and you will end up in court. So now you have these soldiers, they're gun-shy. They don't know what to do. They are now being abandoned by their leadership in Washington. And members of the Savage Nation, I've said it before and I will say it again, mark my words. I am so certain of this, I am as certain of this as the sun coming up tomorrow. This will be Obama's Vietnam. Afghanistan will break him, just as Vietnam broke Lyndon Johnson. And in Vietnam, we could have won that war in 6 months. But it was our political elite, our liberal political elite, that would not give our military the support that they needed to win that war. That war was micromanaged from Washington, with rules of engagement that the military was complaining about throughout the entire Vietnam War. And we sacrificed 58,000 dead in a senseless liberal war because our elites didn't have the stomach to see it through to the end. And that's exactly what's going to happen in Afghanistan. All those boys and girls that he spoke to at West Point, he is sending them to die in the caves and mountains of Afghanistan. And instead of being a man, instead of saying, you know what? I don't have the stomach for this. I don't have the spine for this. You want to know the truth? I'm in over my head. You really want to know the truth? I'm just a community organizer from Chicago, okay? I have one speech. They put it in front of a teleprompter. That's all I have. You know what? I'd respect him more. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again. You don't send American troops to die for an exit strategy. You send them for victory, or else don't send them at all. Let's go to Kathy in New York. Kathy, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Oh, hi, Jeff. How are you?
I
have a son tonight that's leaving from Camp Lejeune. He's a great Marine, honor graduate. He'll be on a plane tomorrow, headed for Afghanistan. And all I can tell you as a mother and as a resident of New York, he does not deserve the Nobel Peace Prize. I like hope and change, don't we all? But action speaks louder than words. I had the honor of spending Thanksgiving with my son. We talked. It is our commander-in-chief. He is not happy with his rules of engagements, but as his mother, and he will honor her, I told him to do whatever it takes to stay alive. And I honestly think he's a wolf in sheep clothing, and I'm appalled to think he would even accept it when there are many men and women who really deserved it.
Kathy, I want to thank you for your call. I want to thank your son for his service, and I want to thank you for giving your son the support and encouragement that he needs. You are also a great patriot, and I want to thank you for that, Kathy. It is people like you and people like your son that keep this country safe. It's why I'm behind a microphone. It's why Dr. Savage can be behind a microphone. It's why we as Americans can enjoy the freedoms that we have. You told your son the right thing. Your son should do whatever it takes to keep himself alive and to protect his fellow colleagues and the soldiers and his brothers and sisters that are going to be fighting by his side. Forget these liberals in Washington, D.C. Their days are coming to an end. Believe me, we have them on the run. The American people can now see them for the charlatans and the frauds and the shysters that they are. These people are traitors, pure and simple. They have betrayed this country's national interest. And if Obama was half a man, he would turn down that Nobel Peace Prize. He has done nothing to deserve it. More than that, no one has been able to answer this point. He is escalating the war in Afghanistan and they're giving him a peace prize. What peace? This is going to be his Vietnam. Can you imagine Lyndon Johnson getting the Nobel Peace Prize after escalating troops into Vietnam? This is the insanity of modern liberalism. They are trying to turn black into white and white into black. Let's go to Steve in New York. Steve, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, how you doing this evening?
I'm good. How are you, Steve?
Okay, my question is, I understand what Obama's doing out there. Not to say I'm a total liberal. However, didn't Bush spend all the money? And if we look at the way things went, he spent all of our money. Obama came in. Yeah, he had nothing to work with. However, the people were so pissed off at Bush, they went to Obama. Now, how do you get Obama out of office at this time with 3 years left on his term?
Steve, look, here's what's going to happen. Mark my words. What you're going to see in 2010 is going to be a political earthquake that is going to shake the liberal establishment to its very core. It's going to be 1994 all over again with this difference. Now we've been through that. We've been through Act One. And we are now going to tell those Republicans, you are no longer the Republican Party. You are the Conservative Party. And we don't want to send you in power so you can be Democrat light. You can be liberal light. Either you implement the policies that we want or we're going to form a third party. We are going to shatter the GOP because we, the American people, have had it. We've had it with your lies. We've had it with your phony promises. And so what you're going to see in 2010 is going to be a conservative backlash, a conservative resurgence. It will stop Obama dead in his tracks. And once we get conservatives in charge of the House and of the Senate, you are going to see investigation after investigation after investigation. And you are going to uncover all of the corruption, all of the scandals, all of the radicalism that is at the very heart of this administration. And Steve, let me just say one more quick point. A lot of this was Bush's fault. And this is why I commend Dr. Savage. Because like he, I was warning about Bush's socialism. I was warning about him that he was a great society Republican. I was saying these bailouts were going to kill us. The deficit spending was going to kill us. But the fact of the matter is this. For all of Bush's flaws, I can't even believe I'm going to say this, but I'm going to say it. He was better than Obama. I even miss him now. Because with this guy in the Oval Office, Obama is the worst president the United States has ever had. He's been in power for 11 months. He has been a walking disaster. When you make Jimmy Carter look like Ronald Reagan, you know as a liberal Democrat, you are really bad. And that is Barack Obama. He is a failure as a president. And frankly, it's time he went back to Chicago and do what he does best. And that's community organizing. This is Jeff Kooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is Jeff Kooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. The lines are blazing. Let's go to Agnes in Chicago. Agnes, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Jeff. I would like to thank you for coming on Michael Savage's show. You are a very great commentator, and you always have great news. And I just really like listening to you every time you are on.
Thank you, Agnes.
To answer to your question, as far as the Nobel Peace Prize for Obama, I pretty much think that he doesn't deserve anything to get anything from anybody. I think he should be, he can remain being the president, but I don't think he deserves any kind of pay. He hasn't done nothing for this country. He has not put none of these people back to work. I think it's about 30 million people that are unemployed right now. All these people that have lost those houses, all these people that are in Iraq, none of them are coming back. You know, all these bunch of broken, you know, promises and all this stuff. Until all of that stuff is done, he doesn't deserve a pay. He doesn't deserve a Nobel Prize. He doesn't need to be flying all over the place when people over here are trying to conserve energy and we're supposed to be, you know, so conservative about this and this and this and this.
You nailed it. Agnes, you absolutely nailed it, and I want to thank you. He is flying around the world. I think this is his 10th or his 11th trip. He has flown more in his first year than any other president before him. This guy is a global jet setter. And there he is again today in Oslo, Norway, standing there and accepting another award that he hasn't earned and that he doesn't deserve. And yet here in America, America is burning. Our unemployment rate is 10%. Inflation is now starting to kick in. We are running massive trade surpluses. The Chinese are buying this country up sector by sector by sector. We now have a deficit that threatens our very long-term economic security. This country is going to hell in a handbasket. Our border is so porous. We can't stop immigrants from going all they're running all over the place. We're facing a massive third world invasion. We now have drug cartels that have completely taken over our border. And yet this guy is too busy going to Oslo, Norway, claiming about he's worried about global warming. He's worried about carbon emissions. Yet he's flying around emitting carbon like there's no tomorrow, emitting greenhouse gas emissions like there's no tomorrow. He is a fraud. And he is somebody who I think now finally should realize that Obama mania has faded. His poll numbers are dropping like a stone here in America. Even around the world, the glow around Obama has now gone. The bloom is off the rose because they now realize behind his slogans of hope and change lay absolutely nothing. This man is a man without substance, and he studied at the feet of Saul Alinsky, and he thought being a community organizer prepared him for the White House. It hasn't. This man is out of his league, and now we are seeing it every day. This is Jeff Kooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The Washington Times, sitting in for the living legend Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Members of the Savage Nation, Michael is off today. Michael, if you're listening out there, my friend, thank you, thank you, thank you for the incredible opportunity. You truly are a legend, my friend. You are a trailblazer in radio. And now you've given me again the wonderful opportunity to sit into this incredible chair and talk to the members of the Savage Nation. Thank you so much, Michael. To all of you out there, please go to michaelsavage.com. There are some absolutely sizzling must-read stories. And in particular, there is one that every patriotic American should read because it now talks about the gathering storm here within the United States, the gathering storm of Islamic fascism. In Pakistan today, five Americans were arrested plotting to commit terrorist acts. These Americans emanate from near my neck of the woods here in Washington, D.C., in the suburbs of D.C. in Northern Virginia. These five Americans, all of them citizens, all of them with deep roots in the Washington, D.C. area, were attending radical mosques and radical community centers. And now it has been found out that they were plotting terrorist attacks and going to Pakistan to get even more training and to now hook up with Al-Qaeda. And what is most remarkable here is that one of those five men, Rami Zamzam, was a dental student here in Washington, D.C. at Howard University. And everywhere on campus, people said, we're shocked that Zamzam is a radical. We had no idea this guy had terrorist inclinations. Really? Because I have been at Howard University. I have given lectures at Howard. My wife used to be a professor at Howard University. I knew many students at Howard University. And I can tell you this, there are some wonderful, wonderful kids there. But there is also tremendous anti-Americanism on that campus. There is a deep loathing and hatred for the United States. And I believe that this guy, Zamzam, certainly felt right. He felt very comfortable. He felt like right in there with every one of those Marxist academics that infiltrate that entire university, that permeate that entire university, where day after day they are portraying America as a racist, imperialist, homophobic, sexist nation founded upon slavery and the genocide of Indians. This is what the students of Howard are getting every day. That's what they call an education at Howard University. And yet, even more than that, what is to me most ominous is that this was not a tip-off by law enforcement. These men were not captured because somehow law enforcement, the FBI, and the Justice Department had infiltrated those mosques, had infiltrated those community centers, and were able to root out these radical jihadists in our midst. No, it was family members. It was, in fact, members of the Muslim community here in the D.C. area. They were the ones that went to the FBI. If it wasn't for those family members, if it wasn't for their patriotism, if it wasn't for their responsibility, if it wasn't for their moral decency, these men would be committing mass murder as we speak. When they went to Pakistan, we still do not yet know what they were planning, but we do know this. They were plotting acts of violence to target Americans. And they had the most valued thing that Al-Qaeda wants. They carried with them American passports. They were Americans who had that coveted passport. Because a passport enables you not just to travel all over the world. You are now an American with all of the prestige and all of the credibility and all of the cachet that comes with it. But you can come back to America, to the homeland, almost unmolested, almost unnoticed. And in Pakistan, were they going to be given biological weapons? Could they carry anthrax? Could they be given a dirty bomb? This is the kind of threat that America is facing. And what is to me most remarkable is just weeks after the Fort Hood massacre, where that butcher, Nidal Hassan, again, somebody who had deep roots in the Washington, D.C. area, somebody who lived in Northern Virginia, went to a prominent radical mosque in Northern Virginia, did his internship at Walter Reed Hospital, somebody who was actively promoted through the ranks of the Army, a man who was promoted to the rank of major, who went around giving out his business card, calling himself the Soldier of Allah, a man who gave PowerPoint presentations where he openly talked about the virtues of jihad, where he said, we love death more than you love life. A man who told his colleagues, his superiors, his classmates, that it was the duty of Muslims everywhere to rise up against the American infidel and to kill American soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan. This man was allowed to rise up in the ranks of the military, undetected. And then on that fateful day, he came in with two pistols loaded and fired off over 100 rounds, slaughtering 14 of our men and women, wounding nearly 30. They were like sheep to the slaughter. And yet nobody thought to act. Nobody in the military or the intelligence community did anything, even though they knew months beforehand that this man was actively communicating with a radical Al-Qaeda cleric in Yemen. A cleric that, in fact, had been an advisor to two of the 9/11 hijackers. A cleric whose own writings and words are on prominent jihadi websites all across England, all across Australia, all across Canada, all across America. He had become a homegrown radicalized terrorist. right there in our midst, right here on our American soil. And this is what happened to these five men. And what I find most remarkable is they became radicalized here in America, on the internet, through podcasts, through chat rooms. And the FBI didn't know? The reason why the FBI didn't know, the reason why the CIA didn't know, is because we have been bending over backwards since 9/11 to not offend Muslim sensibilities, so that we are seen as politically correct and multicultural. We have to be tolerant. We have to be respectful. We can't be offensive. You know, I was talking about this off air with some of the producers. There is a very famous fast food chain here in the world, absolutely delicious. Best cheeseburger you'll ever have. I interview a lot of these guys in the intelligence community and in the FBI. A lot of them are my sources and my contacts. And I can tell you this. They spend hours a day at Five Guys. They love, they'll eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner at Five Guys if they could. And my advice to them is a simple one. Stop eating at the Five Guys restaurant, and why don't you start going after these five guys? Because there are a lot of other Five Guys like this guy all over the United States. And if it wasn't for these family members who had the guts and the courage to say, hey, they left unannounced. They went to Pakistan. They went overseas. We didn't hear from them for weeks. Many of them, luckily, they were so stupid, they ended up calling back to their family members, saying that Muslims need to rise up. Muslims need to do something against the West and against America. One of them left a video, and these family members, sensing something was wrong, they began to go through their belongings. They began to go through their emails. They began to go through their bookshelves. They began to go through their cabinets. And they found this video where this young kid, all of them, under 25, this young man goes on an 11-minute video rant where he says it is now the duty of Muslims to stand up to the United States, to stand up to the infidel, to now take dramatic action. These are the words of religious zealots and fanatics. And it is now high time that the FBI, the CIA, and the intelligence community realize that we must put the safety and security of Americans above their insane liberal political correctness. And to the Islamic community in the United States, let me say this. I know most of you are moderate. We know that. I know most of you are decent, God-fearing people who just want to raise your families. But there are fanatics among you. There are jihadists among you. And this, I'm sorry to tell you this, is your problem. There are no Catholic terrorists. There are no Baptist terrorists. There are no Jewish terrorists. There are Islamist terrorists. And they are using the Quran as justification and Islamic faith as justification for their actions. And this is why not only do you need to help and coordinate with law enforcement agencies, this is why we have to infiltrate these mosques and these community centers. Because if we don't, we will have many more 9/11s and many more Fort Hoods. We were lucky, we were very lucky, that some family members decided to step up to the plate and put their allegiance to God and put their allegiance to America ahead of their allegiance to these jihadist fanatics. But we will not be so lucky the next time. How many more Fort Hoods do we have to have? How many more 9/11s do we have to have? How many more Americans have to die before we finally say enough is enough? Multiculturalism and political correctness is the ideology of suicide. It is the ideology of defeat. It is what the enemy is counting on. Until we get rid of political correctness, we cannot win in Afghanistan, we cannot win in Iraq, and we cannot win in our war against radical Islam. Members of the Savage Nation, I want to hear from you. Do you believe that political correctness is a cancer in our ability to fight the war on terror? Why do you think these five Northern Virginians, these five Americans, were captured in Pakistan And is this a sign that we in the United States have lost the ability to effectively wage the war on terror? Are our intelligence agencies asleep on the job? I want to hear from you. 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-8255. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for the living legend Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. The lines are blazing, 1-800-449-8255. Do you believe that political correctness is hampering our ability to fight the war on terror? Why was it that it was family members that had to tip off the law enforcement community in America about those five Americans arrested in Pakistan today? Why is law enforcement not infiltrating local community mosques and local community organizations? I want to hear from you, members of the Savage Nation. Let's go to Andre in New York. Andre, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, sir. It's good to be here. My comment is that the reason I believe that law enforcement and many people involved in political positions, they don't recognize radical Islam in front of their face is because they're making a false distinction. They're differentiating between radicalism and Islam, regular Islam, and when there is no real difference. And I don't mean that to slander the religion. I believe that these people, many of them, have good intentions. But nevertheless, the religion itself is, by its very nature, radical in terms of its requirements and its views of people outside of its own sphere. And that results, in blindness. And I have one other comment.
Go ahead, quickly.
You helped me to see that, you know, when they're teaching Marxism and radical diversity in a school, teaching the students to hate America, then, I mean, by linking it up with terrorism, we can almost call Marxism, which it once was considered to be, terrorism.
You're right. No, Andre, Marxists were considered terrorists. They've been considered terrorists essentially for the entire 20th century. And this is what the mainstream media is refusing to divulge to you, the American people. They are hiding it. The alliance between the hard left and Islamists. If you look at Noam Chomsky, if you look at George Soros, if you even look at somebody like Al Gore, look at Barack Obama. They are the best friends that Islamic radicals can have because they refuse to stand up to them, because they refuse to call evil by its name. They seek to muddy the waters. They seek to somehow make it seem as if America is the problem. You want to understand truly why Obama won the Nobel Peace Prize, why he's there today in Oslo? Is because he is our apologist in chief, is because he is the one who goes everywhere around the world and he apologizes for America. America as the great Satan. America is the reason why the Muslim world hates us. America is the reason why we're despised in Russia, according to Obama. America is why the Chinese don't like us. Everywhere he goes, to him, the first country he blames is the United States of America. He has this mind that it is America that has liberated more Muslims than any other country in the world. It is America that has liberated more people in Eastern Europe and all across the former Soviet Union. He can't comprehend it because he is blinded by his own Marxism. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. The lines are blazing, 1-800-449-8255. Do you believe that political correctness is hampering our ability to fight the war on terror? Why is it that law enforcement was not able to infiltrate local mosques and community organizations here in D.C. to find out and root out these five jihadists, American jihadists, who were today arrested in Pakistan. I want to hear from you, members of the Savage Nation. Let's go to Wes in Oklahoma. Wes, you're on the Savage Nation.
You can't even ask them if they're legal citizens when they're pulled over on a simple traffic stop. We can't ask them if they're legal citizens when they go to vote. How this came to be is unbelievable to me. In my state of Oklahoma, you can't cut hair without a license. But you can drive and you can vote. Now, how is that? This has got to be the reason for people to stand up and tell their congressmen and their representatives, this has got to change.
Wes, I'll tell you exactly how this came to be. Over since the 1960s, a radical, fanatical, New Age left, an anti-war left, spawned by their hatred of the Vietnam War, spawned by their hatred for America, spawned by their hatred for capitalism, spawned by their hatred for everything this country stands for, began what they themselves called the long march through the institutions. And if you now look back over the last 40 years, what institution have they not captured? And what institution have they not wrecked and destroyed? They now control our public schools. They now run our universities. That means they indoctrinate our kids. The left have always said this. If you can capture the youth, you capture the future. They now dominate our popular culture. They now dominate Hollywood. They now dominate the TV networks. They now dominate the government. They now dominate the entire bureaucracy. We can't even defend our border. Our schools aren't working. Our economic institutions are not working. Our political institutions are not working. Nothing is working anymore. Everything the left has touched, they have destroyed. And so now what they have been trying to propagandize everybody in this country, to indoctrinate you, is to make all of us believe we are no longer a distinct nation state. If you notice, what is it now that you keep hearing from Obama's mouth? What have been hearing from the Clintons since the 1990s? We are the first universal nation. We are not a distinct American nation. No, we are the nation for the world. This was the essence of Obama's speech today in Oslo. We are the global cop. We stand for everybody, according to Obama. We are not a Christian nation. No, we are a Muslim nation. We are a nation of all religions. But God forbid you should say we're a Christian nation, even though the majority of Americans are Christians. Even though we come from Judeo-Christian roots, we were founded by Christian pilgrims. I wrote a column once where I said America is the product of Christian and English civilization. Were we not descended from England? Were we not once a British colony? Were we not founded by Christian sects? I was deemed a xenophobe and a hater by the Southern Poverty Law Center. This is the madness of liberalism. And so, yeah, you can't ask for the citizenship. You can't ask you can't ask anybody anything, because to do so now is to commit a thought crime. And you want to understand the essence of conservatism. You want to know the fundamental difference between liberalism and conservatism, Wes? It's this. Conservatism believe in the American nation. It's what Dr. Savage has called language, borders, and culture. We are one culture. We are one nation. We are one people under God. This was the motto of our founding fathers. This is what they understood. Here on this soil, on this place, on this continent, we are going to create the greatest experiment in human liberty. And these rights come to us not from the government. They come from God Almighty himself. This is sacred soil. And now this country has been walked upon and trampled and used and abused and sold out for the last 40 years. And the one that's the chief seller out is the guy currently in the White House. He is even ashamed to be an American. And this is why, Wes, we cannot win this war on terror until we finally wake up and realize America is a threat. And we are all Americans. It doesn't matter if we're white, black, or brown. It doesn't matter what color, creed, or religion. When they hit us on 9/11, they didn't care about our religious differences. They didn't care about the color of our skin. In the eyes of Al-Qaeda, we are the enemy. This is why the ideology of political correctness is so dangerous and why it must be stopped. And I'm telling you, Wes, mark my words, it's going to take another 9/11. But this time when it comes, people are going to ask themselves, and they're going to rightly ask themselves, why are we putting ideology above patriotism? Why are we putting ideology above reality? We are slowly killing ourselves. And future generations are going to ask themselves, how did the greatest military superpower the world had ever seen, how did they throw away the war in Iraq? How did they throw away the war in Afghanistan? They weren't even able to protect their own borders. This will be the everlasting shame of America until we wake up. Abe in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello, Dr. Kuna, hello?
Hi, hello? You're on the air, Abe.
First of all, I'd like to ask you how you feel. I agree with you that Obama has no right to accept the Peace Prize. I agree with you. How do you feel toward the kibbutz socialism? Kibbutz, not the bureaucracy of the Soviet Union or Castro, but ideal socialism from the kibbutz itself.
I've studied the kibbutz. I'm not, Abe, I want to be very frank with you. I'm not Jewish. I'm a devout Roman Catholic. Although my grandfather was a Semitophile. He was somebody who loved and admired the Jews, as do I. And for that, he paid a tremendous price. He spent a year and a half in a Nazi concentration camp. There were many Catholics who were very sympathetic to Jews during World War II, my grandfather being one of them. So I am somebody who is an admirer of Jewish civilization, although I'm a very devout Catholic. To me, kibbutz socialism is a form of communitarianism. It is what you see in some parts of the Catholic Church. To me, kibbutz socialism represented an attempt by the Jews for self-determination and self-dignity, to create an independent homeland in Israel where the Jews could finally be safe from all of the persecution and discrimination that has haunted them throughout their entire long, tragic history. I do believe if you're going to have socialism, you have to have it at the local community level where it is religious-based. You may have a chance to have it work. On the whole, Abe, I have to be very honest with you. I believe that socialism has crippled the state of Israel. I believe that it has weakened its economy. It has unnecessarily impoverished the state of Israel. I look at American Jews. I look at Canadian Jews. They are some of the most successful, dynamic immigrant groups the world has ever seen. They have thrived in a free market economy. If you unleash the power of the market in Israel, Israel will not only become one of the wealthiest countries on the face of the earth, more importantly, it will not need to rely upon any foreign aid from the United States or any other country in the world. Because that aid, as we speak, is now being used as a bludgeon, as a club, by the Obama administration to force the Israeli government to make more concessions to the Palestinians that will only result in one thing, and that is more Jews dead. The Palestinians do not want peace with Israel. I know this because I've covered the Palestinian issue here in Washington. They are open about it. They believe that Israel is an illegitimate criminal state that must be wiped off the face of the earth. For them, the West Bank and Gaza is just step one in a larger war to destroy the Jewish state. This is why I believe Obama is the worst friend the Jews will ever have. He is their betrayer. And to all of the liberal Jews in America, I say this clearly now and unequivocally. Your decision to back Barack Obama in 2008 will be a decision that you and your children and grandchildren will regret for the rest of their lives. Because as I speak to you, the mullahs in Iran are now on the verge of getting a nuclear bomb, and Obama will do nothing to stop them. You are now staring at a second Holocaust right in the face. That Persian Nazi dictator in Tehran is now the second coming of Adolf Hitler. He is the Hitler of our time. And you have voted for the American version of Neville Chamberlain. Shame on you. Shame on you. History will never forgive you. Let's go to Bob in Florida. Bob, you're welcome to the Savage Nation.
How are you tonight?
I'm good. How are you, Bob?
Good. I've got a few points, not exactly what you're talking about as far as your subject tonight, but I'm just thinking about how crafty and how smart the Obama machine is. I think they took that several-month hiatus as far as trying to determine to send the troops in and made it a pretty strategic move. And the fact that because not all the troops that McChrystal suggested for were sent in, it pacified some of the liberals. On the other hand, conservatives are a little bit happy that troops were sent in. But I think, as everybody knows, Obama doesn't want to be in that war, and he's using a very strong passive-aggressive move to accomplish what he wants, because Americans that are for the war, they are very afraid that our troops are going to be more devastated, more numbers lost because of not enough troops there in the first place. And so, like Glenn Beck, you know, he's made the statement before that, you know, Obama, we just need to get the troops out if you're not going to fight the war to win. And so the bottom line is, as Obama...
Bob, listen, on this one, Glenn Beck is right. If you're not in it to win, then you send the troops home. But you also make a larger point that I think is very perceptive, and it's this. You want to understand President Obama. You want to understand his administration. You have to remember, these are the boys from Chicago. This is the Chicago way now coming to Washington, and they're trying to make it the American way. Every fiber in their being, every instinct within them, everything they say, every word that comes out of their mouth, every nuance in their voice is loaded with politics. All these people think about is getting reelected and hanging on to power. So that decision in Afghanistan was a completely politicized decision. What he wanted to do is seem tough to middle America, seem like he wants to win the war in Afghanistan, and yet also tell his anti-war left-wing base, but they're coming home. Listen, by July 2011, they're going to start coming home. And what is going to start occurring by the end of 2001? The reelection campaign. The Republicans are going to start having their primary. Everybody's going to start getting geared up for the 2012 reelection. This is all about politics. Everything Obama does is calculated to enhance his political self-interest. This man is interested in one thing and one thing only, and that is power. He doesn't give a damn about your sons and daughters. He doesn't give a damn about sending our boys overseas. He doesn't give a damn how many lives are lost. All he cares about is the same thing he's cared about his entire career. It's about him. He is a post-1960s narcissist. This man is self-absorbed and loves himself. Period. He is our celebrity in chief. And now the reality TV show of As Obama Turns has now come to the White House. And it is we Americans that are going to pay the price. But I have news for Mr. Obama. Every reality TV show runs its course. Every reality TV show gets boring awfully fast, and they start losing their viewership and their audience. And that's what's happening now. Obama mania is fading. Even in Europe, the left is now starting to criticize him. Everywhere around the world, they are now seeing this man for what he is. He is a fraud and a charlatan. The emperor has no clothes, or rather, the clothes have no emperor. He is an empty shell of a president, and an empty shell of a human being. And this is why he is going to be the worst president the United States has ever seen. This is Jeff Kooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Well, Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Kooner from the Washington Times sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage. You know, my friends, I have to tell you, covering politics here in Washington for the last 10 years, I have never seen a more inept and more incompetent administration. I thought things were bad with Bush, but believe me, they are so much worse with Obama. And at times, you really get the sense that the inmates are running the asylum, that there is a kind of mental insanity that is now seizing the political class here in Washington. I often refer to them as political crackheads. These are people almost like you think they have to be stoned. They're just not thinking straight. I mean, literally, they have to be mentally impaired. They're mentally sick. There is something seriously wrong with these people. They are spending money like drunken Marxists. They are slowly bankrupting this country. And to me, I mean, one of the scandals, there's so many. I mean, it's like shooting fish in a barrel dealing with the Obama administration. Take the Safe School czar, Kevin Jennings. Here is a guy who we now have found out, while he was the head of the Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Education Network, a group that he founded, a group that he was the executive director of, provided recommended reading lists to schools. In those lists, he recommended those books explicitly talk about 13, 14-year-old boys having sexual relations and sex, be that he's had sex with other men. Be very careful. It's a family show, so I have to keep the language very clean. But you cannot believe how obscene and explicit those passages are. And all of those books present homosexual pedophilia as natural and normal. They are almost like postered. They're almost like, he's like almost like a poster child for pedophilia. That's what Kevin Jennings was. Everywhere he went, he recommended books that celebrated sex between men and women. And this is not a homosexual issue. I've said it before and I'll say it again. Whatever sexual orientation, look, you want to be bisexual, homosexual, transsexual, pansexual, non-sexual, whatever you want to do in the privacy of your own bedroom is your business. But when you start trying to sexualize our children, when you start trying to put sick, perverse ideas into their heads and telling them at 13, 14, 15, it is right, it is natural, it is okay to have sex with older men, then my friends, that is now a clear threat to public safety. That is now a clear threat to the health of our children. And yet this guy is now our safe school czar. He is a senior presidential appointee in charge of education policy. And my paper, The Washington Times, has been leading the charge, trying to ask him to defend everything that he's done in the past. And yet he stonewalls us. The education secretary stonewalls us. Obama stonewalls us. Enough is enough. Our children come first, and we now demand answers. Mr. Jennings, it is now time for you to resign. This is Jeff Kooner, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is Jeff Kooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Michael is off today. Michael, thank you so, so much, my friend, if you're listening out there, for, again, this wonderful, wonderful opportunity to fill in for you. Michael, I can't tell you how much I enjoy it every time. It is truly an honor and a privilege. And, Michael, I can't thank you enough, my friend. To all of you out there, members of the Savage Nation, go to michaelsavage.com. There are some absolutely must-read, sizzling stories. Now it has been confirmed beyond the shadow of a doubt. 5 Americans who have been arrested in Pakistan, homegrown radicals here in the Washington, D.C. area from Northern Virginia, have now admitted that they were going to a training camp to commit jihad and terrorism against Americans. There is also a must-read story, New Health Plan to Tax Middle Class Very Hard, straight from the Associated Press. What the Obama socialists are now planning in the House and the Senate is not only to implement a massive government-run healthcare program, but it will come after your taxes, it will raise taxes through the roof, and eventually bankrupt this country. All of this and so much more on michaelsavage.com. But my friends, the issue of the hour is the UN Climate Change Summit. This is now clearly a major victory for the international socialist movement. This now marks a tremendous triumph for the globalist left in their march to create a world left-wing government. And at that meeting today, now heads of state are beginning to pour in. The delegates are starting to get into the nitty-gritty of a detail. And the nitty-gritty of the details of the plan. And now we are finding out that they are now looking to implement a plan in the making for over a decade. This now represents the culmination of what the left-wing Greens and the left-wing environmentalists, the radical eco-Marxists, have been planning not only for America, but for the entire world. When the Soviet Union imploded in 1991, when the Berlin Wall fell down in 1989, it should have been crystal clear to the people of the world, and especially here at home in the United States, that socialism had been proven once and for all to be an abysmal failure. And yet, instead of recognizing that fundamental reality, what the people of the Western left did, what Western liberals did, was they then jumped from the worker struggle into global warming alarmism. And what has been driving the UN climate conference has been the great myth of man-made global warming. Even though, as we now know beyond the shadow of a doubt, that at East Anglia University in Britain, at the Climactic Research Unit, which has been the nerve center, the key research institute driving every one of the UN's phony claims of global warming, we now have the smoking gun that emails between climate scientists, which were hacked and posted online, and numerous thousands of documents show beyond the shadow of a doubt that these scientists have been distorting, manipulating, and suppressing the data. All of their computer models that they have been using over the last 5 to 10 years to pull the wool over your eyes, to give themselves a sense of scientific legitimacy about how the world is warming, how the earth is going to burn up, how we're going to have melting ice caps, rising sea levels, New York and San Francisco flooded underwater, massive drought, hundreds of millions of people starving to death, billions of people, climate change refugees, mass movements all across the world. It will be the end of times, according to Al Gore and George Soros and Barack Obama. This is what the international left has been peddling. They have been peddling fear-mongering. They have been peddling an absolute hatred for capitalism. except now this time they are doing it under the guise of the environment. They no longer fly under the red banner. No, now they fight under the green banner. That is the banner that they unfurl. That is the banner that they fly in their march to destroy Western civilization, in their march to undermine capitalism and impose a UN world socialist government. Make no mistake about it, my friends. What is happening at the UN climate change is a massive scheme to take the wealth of rich countries like the United States and redistribute it and spread it to the developing third world. It is an attempt to impose a global cap and trade system that will destroy capitalism as we know it. And in particular, here is our president, Barack Obama, after delivering his Nobel Peace Prize speech, a prize he had no business receiving, a prize he doesn't deserve. He now is getting ready to go into Copenhagen as the conquering hero who at the last moment, on the last day of the conference, next week, is going to ink a deal that is now going to commit the United States to an international cap-and-trade regime. And this is his promise, my friends. He is now vowing. Now, just stand back and think about this. Think of the recklessness of this. Think of the radicalism of this. Think of the sheer hatred of the free market system that has made this country the envy of the world, the richest country in human history. This is what he wants to do to this system. He is now pledging to cut carbon dioxide emissions by 83% from current levels by 2050. An 83% cut means the United States must have the economy that it had in 1870, 139 years ago. Obama is now asking that we deindustrialize, that we get rid of our coal plants, that we get rid of our heavy manufacturing, that we decimate our industry, that we no longer use gas and electricity or oil. Even Karl Marx didn't envision that. Even Karl Marx was somebody who believed the Industrial Revolution was a good thing. He thought it was the workers that should control the means of production, not the capitalists. But he thought industrialization was progressive because it had uplifted standards of living. But this is how primitive, this is how radical the green agenda is. That they now even propose to deindustrialize America and the Western world. And in the face of ClimateGate, in the face of the greatest scandal in modern science, where we now have conclusive proof, not one email, not two emails, we have hundreds and thousands of emails showing they have been fabricating the data, that they have said it among themselves, these leading climate change scientists, the world is cooling. For the last decade, it's been cooling. It's not warming. How do we fudge the numbers? How do we lie? How do we distort? What does the prophet Big Al have to say? Al Gore, the world is coming to an end. It's Armageddon. We only have 10 years before it's too late, according to Al Gore. This guy who lines his pocket, speech after speech, making $250,000 a pop. This guy who at Kleiner Perkins, that's his big eco-capital venture fund, where they have billions of dollars at stake in alternative fuels, in ethanol subsidies, in carbon credits. This guy's going to make out like a bandit. You thought they lived well in the Soviet Union, those communist apparatchiks, with their dachas and their buffets and their mistresses and their Mercedes? It's nothing compared to this environmental global elite. These guys are going to make out like absolute bandits. This man, when confronted about ClimateGate, look at the way he lies. Look at the way he obfuscates the truth. Check this out. Boys, roll the clip.
What they've done is they've taken emails more than a decade old and picked out phrases and taken them out of context and misrepresented them. You know, this is taking place in an era of unreality because all around the world, we're seeing the consequences of global warming.
Al, how are we seeing the consequences of global warming? What islands have been submerged, Al? What continents are underwater? Where are the ice caps melting? Where are the sea levels rising, Al? This is a liar who is the worst kind of liar. He portrays himself to be a prophet. He portrays himself to be a man who wants to save the planet, when in fact all he is doing is lining his own pockets. And the biggest lie is this. He says those emails are a decade old. They're 10 years old. No, they're not. They are several months old. Many of them just 1 month old. This man is a liar. And now he has been exposed once again for the liar that he is. And so the question I have for all of you, members of the Savage Nation, is this. Do you believe the UN Climate Change Summit? Do you believe this UN summit will lead to a new global socialist order? Is it now going to create socialist world government? I want to hear from you. 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-8255. This is Jeff Kooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Kooner from the Washington Times, filling in for the talk radio heavyweight champion of the world, Michael Savage. If you want to see how nefarious this agenda of these international socialists are, and even now how they're beginning to make it explicit, they now feel so confident of victory. They now feel this is their moment. They are so impervious to the evidence of ClimateGate. They are so wrapped up in the religious fervor that is the modern green movement, their worship of Gaia, Mother Earth. Here you have George Soros, the puppet master of the Democratic Party, the sugar daddy of the Democratic Party, the man who controls MoveOn.org, the man who pulls the strings behind Daily Kos, the man who has bought the Democratic Party lock, stock, and barrel, goes on CNN. And what is his proposal? It is now, in effect, a new world socialist government by setting up a so-called Green Fund. What George Soros is now demanding is he is now claiming that global warming is such an imminent threat, it is going to burn the planet up alive in a ball of fire, that Soros is saying now is the time to create a massive green fund where you will put $150 billion that is going to come from countries like the United States and leading industrial nations of Europe, put it into this giant slush fund, this giant green fund, which is going to be run by the International Monetary Fund. And what is the IMF going to do with the money? They're going to redistribute the wealth. They are going to spread the wealth. And they are going to take all of this money and redistribute it from the developed world, from the rich world, to the poor third world. This is socialism on the world stage. And it is now so brazen. It is now so obvious. Here is George Soros outlining his plan on CNN. Boys, roll the clip.
This can be done by using idle resources, the money lying there unused. And there's two elements to it. One is the recent distribution of special drawing rights. The developed world received over $150 billion, and they really have no use for it at all. They have it in the shop window, but as decoration. And they would lend that to the IMF that would set up this green fund. And the interest and the principal would be guaranteed using the gold reserves of the IMF.
Can you believe this guy? Can you believe this guy? He wants to plunder your taxpayer dollars my taxpayer dollars to set up this phony green fund and run by the IMF so it can be redistributed to third world countries so they can also have low carbon economies, so they can learn how to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions. I'm going to tell you what's going to happen with that money. It's going to be siphoned off by every corrupt dictator and leader in the third world. It's going to go into the pockets of the communist Chinese. It's going to go into the pockets of all of these African chieftains who've been bleeding their country white. None of it is going to go to the people. It is going to be a massive global heist with our money. And at the core of it is going to be the International Monetary Fund and the United Nations. And now they're going to create, in the language of the treaty at the UN Climate Summit, a world governing body with the power to tax and regulate. They're even now going to have their own green fund, according to George Soros. This is now green socialism on the march. When the Soviet Union fell in 1991, we thought the battle against socialism was over. It isn't, my friends. The international left is back and stronger than ever. This is Jeff Kooner, sitting in for Michael Savage on The Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back to The Savage Nation. This is Jeff Kooner from The Washington Times, sitting in for Michael Savage. 1-800-449-8255. Do you believe the UN Climate Summit now is cementing the march of global socialism? I want to hear from you, the members of The Savage Nation. Let's go to Sal in Sacramento. Sal, you're on The Savage Nation.
Hey, Jeff, glad to talk to you. Let me just say this. I would say that this global warming thing equals global communism. It's the latest scam to derail capitalism. The difference between global socialism and global communism is that the latter has a ruling bureaucracy that will control everything you do. And unless people stand up, it's coming.
Sal? You hit the nail right on the head. In fact, that is the topic of my column in this Sunday's Washington Times in the commentary section. It is going to be called Green Totalitarianism. Just as communism created a ruling governing elite, this is what global warming is slowly creating both internationally and here in the United States. The EPA just last week said that they have announced, in fact, it was a Friday we knew the announcement was coming, Monday was officially announced. The Environmental Protection Agency came out and now declared carbon dioxide a pollutant. Everything that you exhale out of your nose or out of your mouth after you breathe is a pollutant, according to the EPA. And so now they have a right to regulate American industry and American business. They are going to go after heavy manufacturing. They're going to go after coal plants. They are now going to regulate every aspect of the economy. They are now saying they have the right to tax and regulate everything under the sun in the United States. And the reason why they did it is because cap and trade has stalled in the U.S. Senate. Most moderate Democrats now believe it is too expensive. We can't afford it as a nation. The Obama administration, they know perfectly well that now the American public has become increasingly skeptical of global warming, that the majority of the American people don't believe their lies. So what have they done? They have done an end run around Congress. They are now creating an undemocratic, unaccountable socialist ruling class here in America. And George Soros and his gang, his socialist gangsters, are now trying to do the same thing at the UN World Climate Summit. They now want to create an international socialist class. And if you don't believe me, you want to see the contempt that they have for members of Congress, check this out. Boys, roll clip 19.
I think there will be some resistance, and I think that it won't happen unless there is public pressure and demands from the developing world. to make it happen. And the main difficulty actually is that it would require congressional approval in the United States, and that's a cumbersome and painful process for the administration to go through it. And so they would probably prefer not to do it unless the political will can be generated.
Putting that together,
I think that the president would certainly favor it.
Can you believe that? Can you believe that? He's let the cat out of the bag. The old man is getting soft in the head. And in his old age, he's not filtering his thoughts. He's now speaking exactly what he's thinking. This, they have given the game away. They are now openly telling us that they hold Congress in contempt, that they hold the democratic process in contempt, that Obama would rather not do this thing through Congress. He'd rather circumvent Congress. He'd rather do an end run around Congress. That was the meaning of Monday's EPA announcement, when they're now saying carbon dioxide is now a pollutant. Carbon dioxide is almost everything. What doesn't emit carbon dioxide? This is a form of creeping totalitarianism. And this is the thing. To me, Franklin Roosevelt was one of the most disastrous presidents of the 20th century. I didn't care for his New Deal, and I didn't care for his appeasement of Hitler or the fact that he was naive about Stalin. I think he was wrong on almost every seminal question of the 20th century. But say what you want about the New Deal. The New Deal was passed through Congress. It had the support of not only Democrats, but many Republicans. I think wrongly, but it doesn't matter. It went through the legislative process. It went through democratic procedures. At one time, liberals believed in the popular will. Liberals believed in the democratic process. What do we now see under Obama? He's now trying to ram through a Green New Deal. Except this time, he doesn't want to do it through Congress. He wants to do it through international treaties or through a regulatory regime. My friends, radical environmentalism is another form of communism and socialism. It is green communism. It is green socialism. And just as communism despised capitalism and democracy, it is the same thing with these modern environmentalists. Unless we wake up and see the gathering threat among us, my friends, we are going to lose this country to a new post-democratic socialist regime. We are now going the way of the European Union. And this is why Obama must be stopped at all costs. Let's go to Justin in Houston. Justin, welcome to the Savage Nation.
We need to pay heed to George Washington's farewell address and get out of international affairs. And we should tell George Soros we will start contributing to the Green Fund when Al Gore starts putting his earnings from his speeches in first. I'd like to see that.
Well, that, Justin, that's, you've just exposed their hypocrisy. You know, Al Gore wants to tax your money. Oh, he's all for redistributing the wealth here. He loves to tax the rich and give it to the poor. As long as his liberal cronies get to manage everything and they get to run and create a command and control economy, that's what they're trying to do through the EPA. You want to know what global warming is all about? You want to know what all this alarmism is about? You want to know what cap and trade is all about? You want to know why that Environmental Protection Agency ruling came out on Monday? They are creating, through the administrative fiat, through a government dictate, they are creating a command and control economy. They are now basically telling businesses how much carbon dioxide they can and can't emit. And pretty soon they're going to set up this racket of carbon credits, where you have to purchase from the government credits so they can allow you to emit a certain amount of carbon dioxide. And then you start trading it, and they, of course, they get a fee for every time you trade something. Al Gore is going to make out like a bandit, like an absolute, like a gangster. I swear to you, I respect those Irish bank robbers of the 1930s, the likes of John Dillinger, more than I do this guy, Al Gore. Dillinger came up to you, pointed a gun to your head and said, I want your money. He didn't tell you he was saving the planet. He didn't lie to you. He didn't present himself as this man of compassion, as this man of peace. This guy's a complete liar. This guy's even worse than those gangsters. He's a fraud and a snake oil salesman. That's what Al Gore is. There's no getting around that. So, you know, to me, it is so it is so starkly obvious. And yes, what you are now seeing, Justin, is a patriotic movement. that now seeks to rekindle that birth of freedom that emerged in 1776. You want to know what the Tea Party protests are about? You want to know what the Savage Nation is about at its core? It's even more than borders, language, and culture. It is about the restoration of our founding fathers and their vision of a constitutional republic under the rule of law. We don't want to be governed by elites. We don't want socialism in America. If you want socialism, go to France, go to Sweden, go to North Korea, go to Cuba. It's a hellhole. But here in America, we value freedom, and it's about time we stood up for it. Let's go to Lloyd in Denver. Lloyd, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, I wanted to say that I'm a college student, first-year college student. I spent 10 years in the Marine Corps, and now I want to educate myself. I'm doing a persuasive research paper on global warming and specifically carbon dioxide, and I've seen it from my own research firsthand that it is not driving climate change. I had to do a presentation to the class, and when I did this presentation, I was met with laughter and stunned silence, like they couldn't believe that I wasn't drinking the Kool-Aid that Al Gore has put out there for all of us to go along with. And I don't know how we're going to, you know, come out of this if our own children and our own young adults aren't being taught to think for themselves. They're not being taught how to think. They're being taught what to think.
Look, Lloyd, this is what I've been saying now for a long time. Global warming has become a pseudo-religion. It's a cult. And if you were in 14th century Spain and you spoke out against the Roman Catholic Church, you were deemed a heretic. If you were in the Ottoman Empire and you dared to criticize the caliphate, if you dared to criticize the sultan or Prophet Muhammad or Allah, you were deemed a heretic. This nothing new here. This is a form of orthodoxy. This is a form of indoctrination. This is a form of propaganda. It's like under the Soviet Union or Nazi Germany. How dare you question the official state-sanctioned ideology? Global warming is like the sexual revolution. Those are the two engines of global socialism: to destroy the family, to destroy capitalism, and to destroy the nation-state. How dare you think a woman doesn't have a right to choose? How dare you think that baby in her womb is a sacred life? How dare you? How dare you think that marriage is between a man and a woman? You're a racist. You're a homophobe. How dare you exclude other people from marriage? How could you even think such a thing? You're opposed to pornography. You don't like to see smut on television or in the movies all the time. You think the human body is a sacred thing, created in the image of God. Nope. Not according to these liberals. It's something vile. It's something to be degraded. It's the same thing with global warming. That you actually believe in science and rationality and reason and evidence, as we used to for hundreds of years in the West. That was the basis of science. That was the basis of the scientific revolution. But you can't have that anymore, because global warming has now become a religion. And here's the reason why. My friends, you want to understand the left. The left drives its fervor. It drives its vision. It drives its fanaticism from this. Ultimately, it believes that God doesn't exist. It has nothing but contempt for true religious faith, especially Christianity and Judaism. And so for them, the purpose of life, if you think like they do, stand back and think for a second. If there is no God, then everything is permissible. If there is no God, salvation must occur here on earth. You have to create a perfect society. You're never going to find true fulfillment after you're dead. But if you're a Christian, if you're a practicing Jew, if you're a truly practicing Muslim, in the truest sense of the word, what do you understand? We are created in God's image. We believe in the transcendental nature of man, that we are created to serve a higher being, a higher purpose, who has given us higher moral laws that we must adhere to, or else we will be judged and condemned. Our true salvation is in the afterlife. It is not here on earth. This is what our founding fathers understood. The notion of a perfect society was abhorrent to them. They understood man is born with original sin. He is not God. There's only one God, and we have to answer to him. But to the left, to Lenin, to Marx, to Stalin, to Hitler, to Obama, to Al Gore, to George Soros, we are God. God is here on earth. This is our only chance at salvation. Well, if everything is at stake, if the world is going to come to an end, if you think about it, if you keep saying the ice caps are going to melt, the sea levels are going to rise, continents will be flooded, islands will be flooded, cities will be flooded, billions of refugees, climate change refugees. Well, what is a little thing like the democratic process? What's a little thing like Congress? What's a little thing like the Constitution? This is how the Marxists justified all of their atrocities under the Soviet Union. If you're going to create eternal happiness here on earth, a worker's paradise, no poverty, no sickness, healthcare forever, everybody has a home, everybody has a cow, everybody has a horse. Well, what's a few million people? We can kill a few million to create a perfect society. That was Leninism. That's communism. That's National Socialism. That's Hitler. That's Obama. That is the nature of the enemy that we face. And this is why I've always said you confront it at first principles. You are wrong on everything. The family is the basic unit of society. Capitalism is the greatest engine of wealth. This Constitution is the greatest document ever invented in the history of man because it ensures our liberty and our freedoms. And above all, we are created in the likeness and image of God with the innate dignity that comes with it. And all of our rights flow from that. It is not for Al Gore to take it away from us. It is not for Barack Obama. And this is why we will win. Because in the end, there is a God. And in the end, there is a natural moral order. And that moral order is predicated on freedom and on free will. This is why socialism has always failed. We have the truth on our side. We have justice on our side. We have right on our side. All we need is the courage of our convictions. If we speak truth to power, my friends, believe me, we will win and we will win decisively. This is Jeff Kooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. We're back on the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Kooner from the Washington Times sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage. My friends, the time just blew by. I want to thank all of you for your wonderful calls. I can't tell you how much it means to me to be here once again, sitting in, filling in for the great Michael Savage. Michael, you truly are an absolutely superb talk show host. As I said before, a living legend. And it's been a wonderful, wonderful opportunity to fill in for you today. Never forget that it is always darkest before the dawn. And we as Americans have always faced much, much tougher times. Even today, things may look bleak. Socialism is on the march. Obama seems invincible in many ways. He has strong majorities in both the House and the Senate. He now looks to ram nationalized health care down our throats. He now looks to ram cap and trade down our throats. He now, maybe next year, will be pushing to grant amnesty to illegal immigrants. Yet, compare us to the 1930s, when we were mired in a very profound, deep depression, 25% unemployment, mass hunger within the United States. People were starving. You had the Dust Bowl. Everywhere you looked, fascism and communism were on the march. Europe was headed towards another world war. And as Europe stood on the brink of war, there was only one country that if it could rouse itself from its indifference, if it could go into the inner depths of its economic and military and spiritual strength, could rise up and defeat Hitler's empire, the Japanese empire, and confront Stalin's Russia. If we could overcome those obstacles, think how little the obstacles are today. And my prediction is this. You've heard it here first on the Savage Nation. I believe that the Democrats will be routed in the 2010 elections. I think if they pass this health care bill, it will be an albatross around their neck. The American people will never forgive them for slashing nearly $500 billion in Medicare cuts. They will never forgive them for the soaring taxes, for the high premiums, for the rationing of care, for having destroyed the greatest, most productive healthcare system in the world. And when they lose control of Congress, what will come next is a loss of control of the White House. And then our time as conservatives will have arrived. To all of you out there, thanks again for listening. To Michael, thank you once again for having me on the show. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.